I'm going to read this morning from Canto 3, Chapter 8, Text 9, and maybe a little more than that. This is a discussion between Maitreya and Vidura. It comes after the scene with the speaking of Uddhava Gita. There's in the beginning of the third canto, Srimad Bhagavatam could have ended in two cantos, but not possible because Maharaj Parikshit is too inquisitive. So, and he's speaking, Suta Goswami is speaking something that he heard from Shukadeva Goswami and Maharaj Parikshit. So, the sages of Naimisharanya are with Suta Goswami and they say, way back in the first canto, chapter 13, you mentioned something about Vidura going on pilgrimage. Remember from the beginning of the 13th chapter? Vidura went on pilgrimage and he traveled to all the holy places throughout the land, and then he met Maitreya and they had some conversation. So that must have been a fantastic pilgrimage. Could you tell something about that pilgrimage? And the conversation between Vidura and Maitreya. Wow. Vidura's way up there and Maitreya's way up there, and it must have been a fantastic conversation. Can you describe what that conversation was about? It's like devotees saying, yeah, did you hear there was a wonderful class? You have a recording? Oh yeah, we got it. MP3 right over here. So based upon hearing the question of the sages, the description goes on where Vidura's pilgrimage is described. In the course of his pilgrimage, he went to Prabhas Kshetra, because he went to holy places, and Prabhas Kshetra is connected with the holy place of Dwarka. And there he found that the whole Yadu dynasty has gone. And then Vidura happened to be passing through Vrindavan, and there he happened to meet Uddhava. Just after Uddhava heard Uddhava Gita from Krishna. And so he says, Uddhava, how nice to see you here in the forest. Fancy that. What a coincidence. And seeing Uddhava, he immediately thinks of the residents of Dwarka, because he was the chief amongst the saintly personalities and devotees of Krishna, even above everyone else, the Yadu dynasty members and Ugrasena. He was the topmost. So he started asking about all the associates, Krishna and Balaram and all the associates, and Vasudeva and Devaki and Rohini and everybody by name, and just inquiring. Although he knew they had already departed. But he asked. And then Uddhava, Vidura hit the Uddhava's Krishna button, and Uddhava went into trance. He was so absorbed in thought of Krishna, he lost external consciousness. The Bhagavatam says he went to Krishna in Krishna Loka. His body was there, but he was with Krishna just by absorption in thought of Krishna. But he wanted to do some service, because here's Vidura, he's his elder and he wanted some service, so he with great difficulty came again to external consciousness and began speaking about Krishna. And there's three chapters of his just speaking about Krishna. So many beautiful ways, without the detail. And it went on through the night, because that morning is when Krishna had left, and he explained that when Krishna, before Krishna left, he gave me some service, and I have to go do that service now. He told me to go to where the sages of Naranarayan Rishi, that are their descendants, are situated, and give the same message that he had just given me to them, and that way give his association to them. I'm his messenger, so I've got to go now. He got up and left. He said, but before Krishna left, not only he gave me some service, he mentioned you, Vidura. He said, very soon, he told me, very soon Vidura is going to come. And he said, Maitreya, he was also listening to the Uddhava Gita, Maitreya, the service for you is Uddhava will come and speak with you, and you deliver transcendental knowledge to him. That's your service. So Uddhava said, Maitreya, he went that way. I'm just paraphrasing. He went, and you'll find, you go that way and you'll find him. So Vidura was transcendentally happy and transcendentally despondent because Krishna had gone. But happy that even just before Krishna left, he thought of him and spoke of him. And he, you know, like, I'm very dear to Krishna. He felt happiness. And then he had a service to go find Maitreya. He found Maitreya and he started inquiring from Maitreya. And the subject matters, they didn't start down here, they started way up here. And of the subject matters that he wished to hear, so the previous chapter is his questions, further inquiries by Vidura. There's some discussion back and forth. So now at the beginning of chapter 8, Maitreya is very happy to be with Vidura. I mean, Vidura, even before this, even before he went on pilgrimage, he was respected by everybody in the whole of Hastinapur. Everybody looked up to him, although born of born as a Shudrani's son, but Vyasadeva as his father. But prior to that, Yamaraj himself, he's one of the Mahajans. Yamaraj is one of the 12 great authorities. So everyone looked to Vidura with great respect because of his wisdom. And that's before he went on pilgrimage. And then 34 years of pilgrimage, and then he came in contact with Maitreya. And he's inquiring, not for information, but for the depth of realization of Maitreya. So Maitreya is very happy to have such company and have Krishna Katha with such a personality. Maitreya glorifies Vidura. Just your whole family, the royal family, the dynasty of Puru, and later from him, Kuru, and you're in that royal dynasty. The whole dynasty is exalted. And just to be in the company of a person from such an exalted dynasty is great fortune. He's not saying, oh, you've asked some nice questions, sure, I'll... He's honoring the person that's asking the questions. It's not just culture, it's culture. Cultured people do like that. But it's genuine. It's from his heart. He's feeling very happy to be in the presence of such an exalted individual. If, whether the role is this one's asking questions and that one's giving answers, or vice versa, entering into transcendence is achieved by discussing Krishna Katha, whoever's speaking, whoever's listening. He says, you are born in that family, and it is wonderful that because of your attempt, the transcendental pastimes of the Lord are becoming newer and newer at every moment. Like, what did he do? He just came and asked some questions about Krishna. But the topics of Krishna are, he's Navayovana, he's ever fresh. And the topics, when discussed with such an eager person, the ever freshness feature of Krishna comes out because of you, because of your earnest inquisitiveness. It's he as the speaker, but he's giving credit to the listener. And it's not just, you know, polite or cute or something. It's genuine. This is how transcendence works. Then he says, I will, your questions in relation to Krishna are all disclosed in the Bhagavat Purana, in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So he's going to give the history of how he, Maitreya, heard Srimad Bhagavatam before Vyasadeva wrote it. We say Vyasadeva wrote it, but you know, he compiled it. And it was existent before he compiled it. Here's the history of in the Garuda Purana, I believe. Yes, in the Garuda Purana, there's 12 direct glorifications in one verse of the emperor of all Puranas is the Bhagavat Purana. And then he gives reasons why he says like that. And one of them is, it was spoken directly by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, it was spoken, it was imparted, the whole of the Vedic knowledge, which includes Srimad Bhagavatam, was imparted into the heart of Lord Brahma. Teme Brahma Hridaya Adikavaye. So, there's one sense of the Bhagavatam was directly spoken by the Personality of Godhead to Lord Brahma. Here's another example of the same. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sankarshan, Lord Anantadev, spoke it prior to Vyasadeva's writing it. Here's the history. The Bhagavad Purana was directly spoken to the great sages, the four Kumaras, by the Personality of Godhead for the benefit of those who are entangled in extreme miseries for the sake of very little pleasure. Sound familiar? It's called material existence, not me or the person next to me or, you know, any particular unique individual. It's the creation. Those who are entangled in extreme miseries for the sake of very little pleasure, this Bhagavatam is being presented for them. So, then he goes into the history, because this is a Purana, Bhagavat Purana, history in relation to Bhagavan. Some time ago, being inquisitive to know, Sanat Kumar, the chief of the boy saints, accompanied by the other great sages, inquired exactly like you about the truths regarding Vasudeva, the Supreme, from Lord Sankarshan, who is seated at the bottom of the universe. Of the universe, the planets of the universe are resting on the hoods of Lord Sankarshan, yes? And he's at the bottom of the universe. So, Sanat Kumar and the four Kumaras, wait, where are they residents or denizens? They have a lot of different places where they reside. In one sense, they're Vaikunthavasis, the residents of Vaikuntha. In Brihat Bhagavatamrita, as Gopal Kumara is traveling about, he goes beyond Svargaloka, he enters into Maharloka, and then Janaloka, and then Tapaloka. That beyond Tapaloka is Brahmaloka, but he finds them in Tapaloka. So there's seven upper and seven lower planetary systems, and we're in the middle region. Bhuvar and Svargalokas are the first three, and then there's four more, make seven, right? Three plus four,
yes.
Seven, yes,
yes.
Okay, just checking. So above Svargaloka is Maharloka, and Maharloka is it's not persons that have desire for sensual pleasure, as is found in Svargaloka, like, you know, high grade sensual pleasure in the heavenly planets. They're beyond that. It's an abode, a region of this universe, where grihasthas who are detached from sensual pleasure, but they're absorbed in performance of sacrifice unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And they're so elevated in their performance of sacrifice and so detached from the worldly dimension, the sensual chasing after that kind of happiness dimension. When they're performing their yajnas and offering oblations into the fire to Lord Vishnu, Lord Vishnu comes and extends his hand to receive their oblations. So they like long yajnas because they get darshan of the Lord. And as soon as the yajna is over, the Lord recedes into the fire, and they immediately begin preparing the next yajna. So they can have the darshan of the Supreme Lord. And then, not so much as described about Janaloka, but it's an intermediate planet between Maharloka, and then above that is Tapaloka. And the Tapaloka is brahmacharis only. It's a life of complete celibacy. And the Navayogendras reside there, and when Gopal Kumar went there, the four Kumaras were there. And they do two things. They meditate. They're meditation fans. The reason they're fans is because when they're absorbed in meditation, like Dhruva Maharaj, you know the story of Dhruva Maharaj, right? I'm asking you. Yeah. When Dhruva was in meditation, what happened? He saw the personality of Godhead within his heart. So they like meditation because they're constantly seeing the Supreme Lord within their heart. And after long periods of meditation, they take a meditation break and they engage in philosophical discussions. And the philosophical discussions are way up there. And then they take a little prasadam and they go back and meditate. Yeah.
About seeing in the heart while meditating, on the word seeing, do you mean viscerally imagining?
No.
As a sight?
No, seeing. Darshan. Seeing. They see the Lord. Not imagining. Like picture something in your mind. And they see the Lord, form, the spiritual form of the Lord in their heart. And then above that is Brahmaloka. So this section says, Brahmaloka is the topmost planet. You go beyond Brahmaloka, you hit the covering of the universe. And there's seven layers, each 10 times more, and then beyond that is the spiritual sky and the spiritual planet. So in this section, Canto 3, Chapter 8, it describes that they descended from Brahmaloka down to the bottom of the universe. And their passageway was the flow of the Ganges. I'll read. So, at that time, Lord Sankarshan was meditating upon his Supreme Lord, whom the learned esteem as Lord Vasudeva, Krishna. But for the sake of the advancement of the great learned sages, he slightly opened his lotus-like eyes and began to speak. The sages came from the highest planets down to the lower region through the water of the Ganges. And therefore, the hair on their heads was wet. I mean, it wasn't imagination. Their heads were wet. They traveled through the Ganges from the higher planets down to the... how does that work? Prabhupada describes in the purport, it's a mystic power. Where a river flows, sometimes it's described even on this planet, not to speak, well, other planets too. A yogi who is very accomplished can take sacred bath in multiple different sacred places the same morning throughout the whole of India by dipping themselves into the water in one place and whoop, 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 and then the next, in moments later they're in another place. Sariputta calls this higher dimensional travel. You know, I don't understand it so well. But it's a mystical art of manipulating time and space. So they, through the medium, somehow, through the medium of water or through a river, they can travel, like, you know, faster than Superman. Faster than a speeding bullet. They're there. And interplanetary travel, one of the methods that the Kumaras know the science of, is the Ganges that descends from the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord into the higher planets and down to the lowest planet. King Bhagiratha made that arrangement to bring the water of the Ganges to relieve his ancestors from the wrath, having been scorched, cindered by the wrath of Lord Kapila Dev. So they follow the Ganges path. You know, that if you think about it a little bit, not too much because it's bewildering, but you know, between our planet and wherever else the Ganges comes from, the higher planets, what's that? As far as I have understood, the Ganges just comes out of a mountain. And where was it before it comes out of the mountain? It's not like melted snow or glacier water. It's just, in Gangotri, it's just pouring out of the mountain. Have you been there?
No.
No? I know some devotees that have been there, and it's incredible. Not like a little trickle of melted snow. It's a gushing of water coming out of a mountain peak. Where does it come from? It's the celestial Ganges that's descending. And it, you know, celestial means the heavenly region, and above the heavenly region, they're all way in Swargaloka. Here, the sages came down from Satyaloka, which is Brahmaloka, by taking advantage of the flowing water, a process of transportation made possible by the power of mystic yoga. If a river flows thousands and thousands of miles, a perfect yogi can at once transport himself from one place to another simply by dipping in his water. The Ganges is the only celestial river which flows throughout the universe, and great sages travel all over the universe via this sacred river. So if you want a good travel arrangement, become a mystic yogi. You can go all over the universe. That's like one of multiple possibilities. Go to Siddhaloka and you don't need the Ganges. You just zoom, zoom, and off you go. If you're interested in travel. So the Kumaras were interested in hearing about Vasudev from Sankarshan. The four Kumaras, headed by Sanat Kumara, who all knew the transcendental pastimes of the Lord, glorified the Lord in rhythmic accents with selective words full of affection and love. At that time, Lord Sankarshan, with his thousands of raised hoods, we heard he opened his eyes slightly, and he began to radiate in effulgence from the glowing stones on his head. Because you see the pictures, here's the description from which the pictures are drawn. On his hoods there's a jewel. On each of the thousands of hoods there's a jewel. And when he gets transcendentally enlivened like this, the jewel starts to glow. That's the description. Lord Sankarshan thus spoke the purport of Srimad Bhagavatam to the great sage Sanat Kumar, who had already taken the vow of renunciation. Sanat Kumar also, in his turn, when inquired by Sankhyayana Muni, explained Srimad Bhagavatam as he heard it from Sankarshan. The great sage Sankhyayana was the chief amongst the transcendentalists, and when he was describing the glories of the Lord in terms of Srimad Bhagavatam, it so happened that my spiritual master Parashara and Brihaspati both heard him. Now, text 9. All that was background. Here's text 9. The great sage Parashara, as aforementioned, being so advised by the great sage Palastya, spoke unto me the foremost of the Puranas, Bhagavatam. I shall describe also this before you, my dear son, in terms of my hearing, because you are always my faithful follower. I'll read the purport. We're running out of time because I have this conference call. The great sage of the name Pulastya is the father of all demoniac descendants. It's a great honor, huh? Once upon a time, Parashara began a sacrifice in which all the demons were to be burnt to death because his father had been killed and devoured by one of them. The great sage Vasishta arrived at the sacrifice and requested Parashara to stop the deadly action, and because of Vasishta's position and respect in the community of sages, Parashara could not deny the request. Parashara, having stopped the sacrifice, Palastya, the father of the demons, appreciated his brahminical temperament and gave the blessing that in the future he would be a great speaker of the Vedic literatures called the Puranas, the supplement of the Vedas. Parashara's action was appreciated by Palastya because Parashara had forgiven the demons out of his brahminical power of forgiveness. Parashara was able to demolish all the demons in the sacrifice, but he considered, quote, "Demons are so made that they devour living creatures, men and animals. But why, on that account, should I withdraw my brahminical qualification of forgiveness?" As the great speaker of the Puranas, Parashara, first of all spoke on Srimad Bhagavatam because it is the foremost of all the Puranas. Maitreya Muni desired to narrate the same Bhagavatam he had heard from Parashara, and Vidura was qualified to hear it because of his faithfulness and his following the instructions received from superiors. So, Srimad Bhagavatam was being narrated from time immemorial by the disciplic succession, even before the time of Vyasadeva. The so-called historians calculate the Puranas to be only a few hundred years old. But factually, the Puranas existed from time immemorial, before all historical calculations by mundaners and speculative philosophers. End of purport. So, with the limited time remaining, three things. Just go over the history a little bit, at this point of the quality of forgiveness for a Brahmana, most important, and the importance of hearing in disciplic succession. So the disciplic succession goes, Lord Sankarshan. Now, each of the four sampradayas have their means of receiving knowledge directly from the Supreme Lord, yes? Like in our Brahma Sampradaya, it's Tene Brahma Hridaya Adikavaye. Brahma received directly from the Supreme Lord. Brahma in turn taught Narada, Narada Vyasa, and so forth. So in the there's another disciplic succession called the Kumara Sampradaya. And this is how the Kumara Sampradaya, how the four Kumaras receive knowledge. Not just because they're smart. They heard it. They heard transcendental knowledge directly from Lord Sankarshan. And here's the circumstance. They were inquisitive. They went before him. He withdrew himself from his state of trance and began speaking this transcendental message. Foremost, he spoke the Bhagavad Purana to the four Kumaras. And then in turn, their disciplic succession. So their disciplic succession is described in this way. The Kumaras then spoke to Sankhyayana Muni. We don't hear so much about Sankhyayana Muni. He's not in our disciplic succession. But the Bhagavatam says, Maitreya says, the foremost of great personalities. He heard from the Kumaras, and then he spoke, and Parashara Muni heard from Sankhyayana Muni. And mentioned, there's no detail beyond that, that Brihaspati was also there. And then Parashara Muni then spoke it to Maitreya. Maitreya spoke it to Vidura. Now, disciplic succession doesn't mean, you know, there's many persons that Parashara may have spoken to. In this case, we know that what we're hearing from Maitreya to Vidura is in disciplic succession and is part of the Bhagavatam. Because now, go forward in time, because Shukadeva Goswami is speaking backwards in time, something that happened before Shukadeva Goswami received Bhagavatam from Vyasadeva, before Vyasadeva compiled the Bhagavatam, it was spoken previously. And that's fine. It's just the nature of transcendental knowledge. It's not new. It's not created out of the factory of someone's speculative mind. Just like this example, Vidura is inquiring. Maitreya is in ecstasy. He said, "This is such a wonderful question. It was spoken long before. It was spoken by, you know, because the history." We'll go to the 10th canto. Same thing. Maharaj Pariksit asks a question. In the 10th canto, chapter 87, Prayers by the Personified Vedas. Quickly. Maharaj Pariksit reaches a state having, he's heard the whole nine cantos and the whole tenth canto, Krishna's pastimes explained by Shukadeva Goswami. What a thriller. And he says to Shukadeva Goswami, I'm ready. Death is about to come. 7 days is nearly finished. I'm ready. Let that mystical snake bird or whatever it is come. My mind is completely fixed upon the personality of Godhead. And that means when I give up my body, I'm going to Krishna. I'm ready. And then he says, but I have one doubt. How can you have a doubt when you're like that? It's prompted by Krishna to have his doubt was, how did I get here? How did this happen? Because you're using your tongue, material. I'm using my ear, it's material. And somehow we got to this transcendental place. How did it happen? Good question. And Shukadeva Goswami says, excellent question. It's such an excellent question. Long, long ago it was discussed in an assembly of sages. And when they were discussing, they said, this is such a wonderful question. It was discussed long, long ago. The four Kumaras and the personified Buddhas were discussing this very question. So I'll just say what they said to answer your question. We do that all the time. Somebody says, you know, Prabhu, what do I do about this situation? Say, so that's a nice question. Long ago this was discussed and here's the conversation. Then we're speaking authoritatively. It's not abstract. It's very practical. The authority of disciplic succession carries potency, carries weight, carries gravity. So that's what Maitreya is doing. Such a nice question about Vasudeva was discussed long, long, long ago. Here's the history. And I heard it from Parashara. And Parashara narrated it to me because he was requested to narrate it to me by Palastya. And here's how that happened. mentioned specifically as Palastya is the father of all the descendants of demoniac elements in creation. So who's Palastya? This is chapter 8 of Canto 3. In chapter 12 of Canto 3, further in the topics about Vasudeva Krishna, in detail, Vidura wants to hear about creation and like how did it happen, and not the technology of how did it happen, but the mystery. You know, the deeper Krishna conscious realization that Maitreya has about how it happened. So Maitreya starts describing, and just again looking at the clock, just go quickly. Lord Brahma is born first. The self creation by Lord Vishnu. Garbhadakshay Vishnu generates Lord Brahma. Brahma does his tapa. He has his realization. And he begins creation. And some of the things, it's like long description, very detailed description, very beautiful description. Then Brahma desires, having made the creation, to populate the creation. That's the purpose of the creation. So from his body he generates the four Kumaras, and he requests the four Kumaras to assist him, and they say, no thanks Dad. We want to remain brahmacharis. And Brahma becomes not happy with that response, and from his brow comes Rudra, and Rudra expands it to 10 Rudras and makes a big turbulence all over the place. So he then requests Rudra, just sit nicely and meditate, please. Your time for creating turmoil comes later. And then the very next creation was he created 10 rishis. Palashya is one of those 10. 9 of them became householders for the purpose of expanding creation. The 10th of them was Narada, who remained brahmachari. Here's the verse. This is chapter 12, text 22. Marichi, Atri, Angira, Pulastya, Pulaha, Kratu, Riku, Vashishta, Daksha, the same Daksha that married Sati. It's another story. And the 10th, Narada, were born. So Pulastya is one of the direct sons of Lord Brahma, and he was married. Pulastya was married to one of the 9 daughters of Kardama Muni. So after the 9 sages plus Narada, the next expansion from the body of Brahma was the first of the Manus, Swayambhuva Manu and Shatarupa. And Swayambhuva Manu and Shatarupa produced 2 sons, 3 daughters. Devahuti is one of those daughters. Devahuti is married to Kardama Muni. And then from Kardama Muni and Devahuti, 9 daughters. Lord Brahma came and said, very nice, these 9 daughters should be given in marriage to these 9 sages. So Pulastya married one of those 9 daughters of Kardama Muni and Devahuti, and her name was Havir Bhu. And from Havir Bhu, different personalities were born. Agastya Muni was their first son, and apparently, there's not a detailed description, but descendants of them were demoniac. And one of them was named Kalmasha Pada. Kalmasha Pada did something not very nice. He killed the father of Parashara and then ate him. Not very nice. Parashara's father was Mahashakti, Maharshi Shakti. And Maharshi Shakti's father was Vashishta. Vashishta is one of those 9. So Vashishta, Maharshi Shakti, Parashara. That gives the lineage. Parashara, he was very angry. Brahmana, in this case, became angry. Not normally what Brahmanas do. He became angry. And he knew how to perform a sacrifice that would destroy all the sons of Pulastya, all the demoniac species. And he was in the midst of doing that. And Parashara's grandfather, because his father is dead, his father's father, Vashishta, came and very mildly requested him to desist. Stop. One of them killed your father. You don't punish all of them because one of them killed your father. It's not appropriate. It's not proper action. Stop. And instead, be forgiving of this act and the person who performed the bad act. Immediately. It wasn't a big, long discussion. Yeah, but, you know, I want to get back. Look what he did. He should be punished. So he immediately stopped. Just because of his respect for his grandfather, and specifically Vashishta, his stature in the creation was to be revered. And just because of some person of great position spoke, he accepted. Just like that. And in the purport, Prabhupada is saying how he internalized the message. The message was, I'm a Brahmin. And demons are created to do these demon things. Why should I kill them and thereby abandon my brahminical quality of forgiveness? Better to stand by the brahminical quality of forgiveness and just be forgiving. It's, you know, it, another way of saying the same thing is say yes to Krishna. So that's a nice lesson. I wish I had more time. It's a nice lesson. Forgiveness. Something happens. It's the advice of Bhishma Dev. When you become angry, somebody has an anger problem. Put something on the other side of the pan scale. Forgiveness. Those that transgress against you, forgive them. Just like Christ did. Prabhupada referred to that. Forgive them. They do not know what they're doing. Very, very, very similar to what Parashara had said. And because Parashara did like that, he received the mercy of the Supreme Lord. It came through Palashya. Palashya said, "You, this is so incredible. I give this special benediction that you will be a wonderful speaker of the Vedas, that's particularly the Puranas." And he's the principal speaker in the Vishnu Purana, one of the Sattvic Puranas, and a great personality in the whole of the history of the Vedic life. And he spoke Srimad Bhagavatam even before Vyasadeva spoke it to Shukadeva, who spoke it to Maharaj Pariksit. And he spoke it at the request of Palashya to Maitreya. And Maitreya is now speaking it to Vidura. And that's our way of transcendental life. We speak in the cyclic succession. That's our duty. It's our strength. If there's anything that we can say that's good about ourselves, is just we stick to the disciplic succession. We don't go anywhere outside of the disciplic succession. Just steadfastly stay at the lotus feet of the immediate link, and immediate link means the whole line of disciplic succession, where our life becomes blessed. People say, please give your blessings. Just stay at the disciplic succession's lotus feet, and you get everything. Just stay there. Not, you know, here's some dust of your bhav. Get some blessings. It fits into the discussion yesterday evening about endeavor, cheshta. It's one thing, I desire to be at the lotus feet of, you know, but then you do something. You stay at the lotus feet. You make some endeavor. Because there's waves of the material energy that are pulling and pushing and tugging, and the mind and circumstance and Kali Yuga and all of our, you know, impurities of heart trying to drag us away, and just say no. I say yes to Krishna and no to that stuff, and there's strength in it, and there's wisdom in it, and there's empowerment. If there's any merit that we have, it's that. And those who bestow it upon us, we're indebted, we're deeply indebted to them. Again, the other direction is Maitreya is so happy. He's so happy to have such a wonderful person as Vidura. By that interaction of Vidura and Maitreya, Maitreya is saying the potencies of the personality of Godhead are expanding. It's wonderful for both parties, the speaker, the receiver. And then part of the duty of the receiver is to again be the transmitter, having received. Don't be a miser. You give to others what you've received. It's a great treasure. And I'm going to run because they're probably trying to reach me for the conference call. Hare Krishna. Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna.